Good evening, everyone, or good morning, wherever you are. What prompted the trip that two colleagues and myself, Shamini, Miran, and myself, the trip to Las Vegas was concerns about technology. Primarily, there were four at the back of my mind. AI, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, augmented reality, and micro-learning. Artificial intelligence, I came across an article a year or two ago that the U.S. Army was using it for leadership development. Now, you would not think, why would anyone use robots for leadership development? They had programmed the robot to simulate certain tribal leaders in Afghanistan so that the soldiers could be trained to negotiate with these leaders, right? So they were taking role playing to a very different level, and that article sent some shivers down my spine. Then I've heard about virtual reality devices becoming very inexpensive. Google has launched something that costs like $20 or something like that. You can get it from Amazon.com. And augmented reality, I didn't know anything about it, except for things like Pokemon Go. I don't play the game, but I know how it's been played. So it's about interacting with our normal reality with something that's virtual. So, and the last one that was the trigger actually was learning about micro-learning from the end-to-end meeting in Amsterdam, primarily about Grovo, the company named Grovo. I think it was Clive and Bob Morley who brought up this company's name, saying how they've gone into the soft skills area, and their seed money was something like 100 million, and they teach skills in 1 to 2 minute chunks. So so it's just in time. You learn something micro just in time when you need it, right? And now when we got back, we discovered that a bank in Singapore, a client of ours, hardly did any classroom training in the region, but they are all subscribed to Grovo. Someone visited our booth in an exhibition in KL a few months ago, a big firm, big company, and they told one of my staff that they don't do any classroom training anymore. Right, so bits of data were coming in all within a few weeks after end-to-end. I think we were on the lookout for more of these kind of data that said that something is happening and we need to do something about it. Right, so that was the spur. End-to-end, Bob Morley talked about DevLearn, which was the conference we went to, the largest e-learning conference of its kind. Now, there were 10 tracks at the conference. The tracks we paid attention to were four: emerging technologies, games and gamification, mobile and tools. Instructional design was interesting because we do a lot of internal design, just that we were not ready for e-learning type of design because we are nowhere near, we are just at the start of investigating the journey. So that one is bracketed. We didn't pay as much attention. We didn't pay much attention to it, though it was of interest to us because we were not ready for it yet. So emerging tech, games, gamification, mobile, and tools are where were the sessions we attended. We split ourselves. Shami mostly attended the booths because they had like well over 100 booths there. And we figured, and when we looked at the types of booths before the conference, we decided there's so much to investigate there, we need someone stationed outside and two people attending the seminars inside. And so that was the strategy we used. So most of the time, Shamini was outside, except for the pre-conference. So at the pre-conference, all three of us attended a one-day conference. Now, these were some of the pre-conference workshops. And I attended the third one on ecosystem solutions. There were others on mobile impact, how to get started, behavior change, and adapting traditional classroom design. So, Yeah, so they're all about e-learning, and in a broader way than you know what we normally what I used to normally think about e-learning. So they are talking about behavior change. They're talking about ecosystems, and so that was the pre-conference workshops. Now, in the tracks proper, right? The track that were of greater significance to us. Were performance support and ecosystem, blended learning, implementing e-learning, and gamification. Because these are the tracks we felt were small firms, and most of end-to-end, we are all small players. Small firms can possibly get into implementing some of these. Mm-hmm. So these were the tracks we paid attention to. Now, this next slide, Pete loves this slide. He thinks it's really terrible. if you look under four of those headings, that performance support, ecosystem, learning, implementing e-learning, and gamification, you will see a sample of the talks that were given, right? So these are just samples. I just culled out a few that we had identified as ones that we could not go to all that we wanted to go to. There were too many things happening at any given time that was of interest to us. So if you look at the words that have been underlined there, these are the sorts of things that these e-learning guys are thinking about. The feeling I got when looking at the companies that were at the L&D, at the conference, when prior to going to the conference, right, was that this was an alien species invading our territory. You know, we hear of alien species, right? Not as in outer space, but you put a different sort of fish into a lake in the U.S., the fish that comes from wherever, China, and it might gobble up a whole bunch of the local fish, right? So it's things like that. So these were alien fish because we did not recognize almost any of those logos. I think there are a few familiar ones. I think Covey Leadership was there, Articulate Storyline was there, so a few. But even Articulate is in the e-learning space. So there were no traditional learning people, almost no traditional learning people in there. And so you've got all these people coming in into our field, and we don't know, they're not really visible yet, right? So they're not grabbing the headlines yet. But they are there, they are invading. And so that was the feeling I got. And of course, when we went to the conference, that feeling was confirmed that these guys are serious in e-learning, serious about L&D, which is our territory, and they're approaching it in a really different manner. And we met many people who I thought were really capable, not just the speakers, the participants, who were in the field, steeped in the field. So these are some of the things that we sampled during the three days. I was particularly interested in performance support and ecosystem, right? So I was particularly interested in that, and I attended one or two. My one day pre workshop was on the ecosystem, and then after that, within that we talked about performance support, and after that I went to one or two sessions on performance support. So that was my main area of interest in there, whereas Marian and Cham attended other things. Now, what's our one thing that caught our attention was in the space of blended learning. So blended learning has got pre-work, then you have the classroom, and then you have post, right? There was one particular speaker, psychologist, I believe, a professor, who talked about some experiments that they did. And he, in his model, there are three types of post-program reinforcements. If you look at it from the bottom up, there's cognitive, then there's social, and there's behavioral. And he says you need all three types for learning to stick. So at the cognitive level, they did an experiment that was very counterintuitive. They had three groups, or they had four groups, a control group and then three other groups, right? So they followed up post-program, they followed each group up, followed up the groups differently. One group, they gave them 30-minute videos to watch, timed in a certain way. In the second group, they gave 5-minute videos to watch. And in the third group, they gave 5 seconds SMS messages, right, via phone. And then they did a post-test at the end of a couple of months. The control group had a very low retention rate, 15% or 10% or something like that, of the course that was taught. The 30-minute video guide group, they had a 55% retention rate. The 5-minute video group also had 55% retention rate on average. And the 5-second SMS group also had 55%, right? So it does not make sense at the surface level. And his hypothesis, or the hypothesis of the community, I'm not so sure, but certainly he said that what they believe is happening is that when someone gets a 5-second SMS, they recall a lot of that. So it's almost like things that are connected are also recalled similarly in their minds, even though that was not manifest in the SMS, right? Unlike with the video clips, right? So it's not manifest. It's a 5-second thing, well-crafted question, I'm sure, and a whole bunch of recall starts happening in the brain. And now what the implications of this, of course, for L&D professionals is that we don't need to. Now, he didn't say if this study has been replicated by others. So at least I didn't catch any mention of that. But if we take it that the study is valid, what it means is that we don't need to worry about long video clips being sent as a program. We have been doing recently 12 newsletters, you know, or one-page emails with reminders in there. Now we think we don't need that. So we haven't started the SMS or mobile phone system yet, 5-second thing, but that's the direction that we are planning to head towards based on this feedback, on this piece of information. So that's about post-programs reinforcement. Peter asked me a question in the morning about what are the main takeaways. I see four here. One is that and this is my last slide, by the way. There is a 3 to 5 year window, probably, that's our estimate, before e-learning becomes significant. And that window might be longer in countries that are less developed, like Malaysia, for instance. We are probably 10 to 15 years behind the most advanced countries in L&D, probably somewhere in that space. So in any case, we think there's still a 3 to 5 year window, even in developed countries. So that's a breather. So my fear level has subsided for the moment because we've got the breathing space. The second is that one of the interventions, so while we are going into blended learning, another intervention is facilitated interventions, right? Less so the trainer just delivering stuff, right? A disseminator of information, but more facilitating the discussion in a really rich manner, something that cannot be replicated easily in a virtual environment. So we are exploring that. And then, of course, customized interventions, workshops by specialists for most senior participants. We think this will be in demand for quite a while. If nothing else, companies will want to take their most senior people out for 2 days, you know, away from work, stuff like that. Okay, but it has to be of a very high level, and with some amount of custom. It need not be fully customized, but there must be some amount of customization. That and the experience is really intense, and it's very hard to get that type of thing. With at least our experience has been that it's hard to get that with a less experienced trainer. So you need a trainer who's very well versed with the material. They know it in depth, and then the client says it's worth paying because there's so much learning happening, or the answers to the questions that the seniors raise is much better than ordinarily it would be with a more junior trainer. So we think customized interventions are there. Our immediate focus though is on blended workshops, starting with the post-program reinforcement, probably via mobile. We are exploring that. We haven't subscribed to any service yet, but we are definitely exploring mobile to do the cognitive reinforcement. For social, we might go the route of private Facebook groups, but that's a little tricky. That one's always a little tricky because there might be some information that the client does not want to put onto, even if it's a private Facebook group, right? So they might not want the participants involved in that. I just realized I didn't explain one particular slide, that slide for reinforcement. I didn't explain the what comes after cognitive. After cognitive text messages, right, cognitive reinforcement comes social, where participants share video clips in a closed group. So 1 to 2 minute clips about how they have or what they've learned or what they've noticed and stuff like that. And towards the end of the program, there will be a behavioral reinforcement where they give longer sharings, and it could be done via video clips on their implementation. So 1 or 2 cases that they have worked on, they would share that. So it might be a 3-minute or 5-minute video clip on that. So that's the behavioral shift. So those are my slides for now.
Terry?
Yep.
Just a quick comment that you noticed two vendors that really seem to have it together around
yep.
mobile
yeah.
reinforcement. One was a company called Mobile Coach that's out of just really close here to Utah. I know their owner and they're a great company.
Yeah, Vince Hahn, right?
Yeah, Vince Hahn, exactly. He's outstanding, and they've got a good group for very specifically focusing on mobile reinforcement. The other
yeah.
one...
Mm-hmm.
company called Swiss VBS out of Toronto, and they seemed more expensive in their offering, but also more robust around mobile support. But we'll be looking more deeply into them over this next year, and as we learn more, we're happy to share what we're learning.
Yeah, I think Bob, the difference between Mobile Coach and Swiss VBS, and there's another one called Train by Cell. Is the use of SMS for post-program or post-training reinforcement versus mobile apps for post-training reinforcement. So mobile coach is Vince's stuff is very much around just SMS. It's pure SMS.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Swiss VBS, I didn't go there, but with Train by Cell, it's an app. So it has... by nature of an app, it has SMSs, it has games and quizzes, you know, so you could get badges and things like that. So that app and a little bit of that gamification bit comes in as well. But the idea, it's primarily post-training or post-program as opposed to pre-program.
That's right. Later on in the call, I'd love to share our thinking around strategy and test it with the conclusions you guys came away with, because that's part of what we were going there for, and I'd love to test our thinking with you guys.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I think that'd be a pretty valuable place to get to fairly quickly, actually.
But
I have a quick question in between. Maybe I'll ask you, Sharmini, because you're a good social person, you like to meet people. You know, who was there? Was it mostly clients, end users, or were there a lot of trainers or a lot of training companies? You know, who was that dev?
I think it was primarily L&D, corporate users, more corporate users, so it'd be HR L&D professionals from corporate world, and suppliers or vendors would be a small group, I think probably about 5-10% at
okay,
most.
Okay, cool. And did you talk to many of those corporate, you know, end users, buyers, L&D people? And I guess the question goes out to you and Bob too. But and if you did talk to those people, did you get a sense of what they were looking for?
Okay. Generally, we divided our roles very specifically during the event. So I was tasked... No, my role was essentially the exhibition. So I was scouting the exhibitions.
Yeah. Yeah?
So most of my conversations were with suppliers and providers. Having said that, I attended a one of the pre-con workshops, and there in that workshop, 90% were L&D corporate users, and my take on it, plus my experience at the showcase, the demo, that most of tech in the US tends to be used for compliance training. That's the focus, because compliance training is seen as boring, it's painful, but yet it needs to be done. If not, why is it called compliance? So therefore, people need to get, you know, their team trained, their sales team trained, their engineers trained, whoever. So it's done mainly for compliance training. That's my take on it.
Yeah. Bob, did you talk to many clients there? Or, I mean, it can be outside of Devlin too, I suppose, but... what are you hearing, and what are they wanting?
Well, it was interesting. just like was being said before, I think that Sharm, you were talking just a minute ago, right, Sharm?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yes, that was.
So it seemed like the profile there wasn't very senior. You know, it was a lot of people that either are practitioners of e-learning, they're developers, or they're users in some way, and they're more at the level of like entry level HR, and then a whole lot of vendors who were there marketing their material and things like that. And on the one hand, our takeaway was, well, there's a lot of stuff out there that isn't that great, but in the same process of having that takeaway, we have the feeling of that's both an opportunity to do something that's great, and it's also an indicator that even though the stuff isn't that great, because people are looking for different modalities, there are people that have entered the market and been able to grab some market share. Without having a lot of great, they're just early. They're early to the game, and you've got early adopters picking it up.
Yeah.
But okay. Yep. A big takeaway for us too was that as we looked at the different kinds of learning that people are doing, you know, there's pre-learning, and measurement or measuring impact, the actual learning itself, and then the support or follow-up or that kind of stuff like we're talking about with Mobile Coach, and we found that our thinking was that a lot of what people are doing is still experimenting. Unless you have something like a Grovo where they've gone really big and they're trying to really disrupt, there's a lot of noise in that market still too.
Yeah,
Sean and Terry, I don't know if you guys felt the same about that.
Well, I think for us, I think we are so far behind in this area. We had no way of judging the quality of providers in any significant manner. You know, I think we didn't attempt that. We noticed a lot of course, duplicates, you know, stuff like that. So there was very little way of judging that. What we did notice, though, was that there's hardly anyone from Asia at the conference. I think Sham noticed a Singaporean on what you call this, on the Twitter site. There were a couple of people from India, but they were mostly vendors and a couple of Asian-looking people in the crowd that I didn't connect with, but it was a really small number. So in this part of the world, we are really far behind. Singapore seems to be serious about it, because Sham just sent us something from a government body, the Adult Learning Center.
Yeah, the government is pushing to get training or learning into tech into learning. And so when the Singapore government does that, it essentially puts a lot of money at disposal of either SMEs or companies, and through subsidies or grants or or cashback or anything like in that form to get them going and exploring that field. So right now it's tech and learning.
With the 20 minutes left that I'm seeing in the chat box, that this is a big topic and we clearly need more than an hour for it, and that's okay. But I just thought what might be of really good value is to maybe jump to what, you know, you and Sham and Bob felt were your sort of, I guess, key takeaways from the 3 days there, and also perhaps your quick thoughts on, you know, where you see your business changing or adapting to use this technology. I mean, Terry, you've already touched on that a bit already. I'd love to hear from Bob as well, where you think you guys are going with the tech. And again, we might not be able to do that in 20 minutes, but if we touch on it now, then we might have something to go with in our next conversation as well.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. What we came away from the event thinking is that there is a trend in the market where there are large organizations. I think we went and saw Coca-Cola speak as one example, that are relying more and more heavily on online learning, especially for using it as a way to disperse learning much more broadly throughout their organization. And so it is important to find a way to transfer learning using technology. We also thought that in an effort to disrupt ourselves and to get into that space, like what Terry was saying, we lack the knowledge of how to do it. And so what we thought is we wanted to start at the sustainment piece, because the sustainment piece won't disrupt our business too dramatically and get our focus off of the core while we need it to be there. But we'll build the sustainment into what we already do, experiment there with using the technology and learning what we need to know about its effectiveness, and then start to build modularized learning as a second phase. So this first year is going to be all about sustainment, and we may consider hiring a person to do some programming and building for us. But first we're going to look at how that compares to going straight with the vendors. And the technology that we looked at was LMS for managing the learning, and then pieces that are specifically focused around sustainment. And we liked Swiss BBS, Mobile Coach. Then there was another one that I'm forgetting the name right now, but I can send it out to everybody, that seemed very impressive. So we're going to do some exploring with those vendors, start with sustainment, build the remainder of our plan, and start with modularized learning.
And by modularized, could that be, you know, faces on a video, or would it be a live trainer?
It's interesting. There are people doing a lot of live or synchronous learning, and we may go down that road. But when it comes to sustainment and support and implementation, we've thought that what we would explore first is, since we're looking at sustainment, building modules that will help in sustainment that are asynchronous, video-driven, where we use story. You know, and I thought a lot about Sean while we were down there, because I thought the learning that seems to grab people and actually have a great effect is built around stories, and it's more sticky. Mm-hmm. Whereas micro-learning, you know, if I were looking at that as a company, I'd think, I don't know how effective that really is over time, even though it's obviously effective enough to have built a massive company.
You mean like Grover?
Yeah, like Grover. Yeah.
I think it'll have its place for sure, but I agree with many other things around, you know, will people actually get what they need from, you know, micro learning in all aspects of learning. But that's a big topic, of course.
Our biggest takeaway is, while we recognize the need to disrupt ourselves, we have to maintain our core and begin experimenting and learning so that we don't just jump right into it and invest a bunch of money. I even at Franklin Covey years ago, they spent millions in online solutions that never went anywhere.
Oh, that's valuable feedback. Thanks. And Sham, what was your kind of key takeaway?
Terry has already kind of mentioned about our strategy, right? So our strategy is around post-training and its reinforcement. And essentially the idea that's driving it is that post-training reinforcement is something that it's called a low-hanging fruit. It's easy to get into, and the results are significant, because one is from a learning perspective, we are able to show HR or L&D effectiveness or impact, and HR and L&D can take it back to business and say, these are some things that are happening that you know our partners are supporting us with. We need to do something internally if you know people are not having a take up. So that's post training support from a learning perspective. From a branding perspective, it also pushes us up there for investments in terms of time and money that are on the low end as far as tech is concerned. So from branding, if you're going to differentiate yourself from your competitors, especially where the space that we're in, which is business presentations, something like this can brand us quite significantly and make us stand out quite significantly. So hence the reason why we are kind of also in that same thinking as Bob and Arvinger. That's where we want to focus on.
Thanks, Sean.
I'll add to that. On a personal note, I was very apprehensive about e-learning before I went to the conference. And I felt relieved after the conference because I felt there was certainly a window of at least 3 years, probably 5 years, and maybe even in some countries, maybe even longer, right? That classroom learning is not going to disappear from multinationals within this period of 3 years to 5 years. So we will start seeing some impact with it. So anyway, there's a window there to start doing something. The other intervention that we are, so that's the relief bit, right? That's a one takeaway. The other is that to go into facilitation-heavy workshops. So any workshop that just primarily teaches, right? So the trainer is a dispenser of information, primarily a dispenser of information. Those workshops, whether it's soft skills or technical skills, those workshops are very, very vulnerable to computerized learning. So we need to go into things that require more facilitation. And so we are looking into that. The third one is customized workshops by specialists. So if you take our Think on Your Feet license plus our case maker and our business presentations, Presidents Alive, there are clients that are asking blends at a more sophisticated level, right? They say we want 1 or 2 days of Think on Your Feet followed by something else a week or two later. So it is this customized learning with specialists. So it's not the entry-level type of trainer, but more specialist trainers who can do this sort of thing. We think that one is not going to go away for a long time. So in terms of strategy, that's where we are starting to put some energies towards. So the first, in terms of technology, it will be the post-workshop reinforcement. In non-tech, will be facilitation-heavy interventions and customized workshops. So those are the three areas that we are focusing on.
Okay. Oh, fabulous. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Sharman. And thanks, Bob. I have a question only because it's front of mind for me. I was talking to someone yesterday about this. But did, and I don't know if DevLearn covers it, but what about delivery of workshops, facilitating workshops, if you like, but done virtually? Was that something that was talked about? Were platforms there for that? You know, what's your take on that? So I don't know. Bob, do you guys do that much with your Arvinger materials? Do you do anything virtually with trainers live online?
We don't do it right now. At Vital Smarts, they made a foray into that, and also at Franklin Covey. Mm-hmm. And there was some success around it. Like we found at Vital Smarts, we had a large deal with Oracle that was worldwide, and they specifically in the purchasing process or the RFP asked a lot about how we could support online learning because they had teams that were scheduled in or that were located all across the globe and yet were working together remotely. And so it was an absolute necessity for them to go through training together online. So we feel the same safety net that Terry was talking about, and also a need where there's a segment that, if we want to get to that segment, particularly with large multinationals, we'll need to have some kind of capability in that. And whether we have it be through modularized learning that is led by experts within the company that are certified to do so, or whether it's us trying to lead online sessions, or both, we still need to work that out.
Marian was having breakfast a few minutes ago, and she overheard your question. So she's going to give some, because she attended the session. So May, over to you.
Hi, Pete. Hi, everyone. Just some quick words on that. The pre-conference that I attended was on what they call VILT, Virtual Instructor-Led Training. What I found was that most of the people who attended, they were all from the US. I was the only one from overseas. Most of them, or many of them, had a lot of experience in doing virtual VILT already, right? So, but the workshop was focused on, you know, tweaking it, making it more engaging, and all that, right? So what I took away from it was a couple of things. One is, at least in the US, it seems, in fairly large corporations, there seems to be quite a lot of it going on. Number two, they talk a lot about the tech issues, right, involved. And I learned about a role of what they call a producer versus the role of the facilitator. So the pre-conference workshop itself was led by a facilitator, and there was another woman who was producing it at the same time. So she was handling all the tech issues, responding to our chat, responding to our questions while the workshop was going on. So we attended it using, what's that software? Not WebEx, but...
the Adobe?
GoToWeb.
Not GoTo. The more sophisticated one.
The Cisco one, right?
No. I'll get it later. Yeah. So we were attending the workshop, even though we were physically present, it was being on one of those platforms, right? So they said that you're doing it for, even if it's for 16 people, or you're doing it for 200 people across the world, you do need somebody somebody producing it, handling it. So they don't recommend a facilitator doing that. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's another takeaway. And finally, I asked them the question. Captivate. Captivate from who?
Adobe.
Thank you. Adobe Captivate was the. It's kind of seen as the.
Yeah, it's one of the leading platforms.
One of the leading platforms, right? And thirdly, I asked them a question about, you know, whether the facilitators need to be, you know, tech savvy, right? And their answer was a resounding yes. So, you know, so because I looked at the amount of tech involved. Those were the three things that there. Number one, in the US, the large corporations, they seem to be doing a lot of online training. Live online training, and number two, you need a producer there with you, and number three, you're the facilitator, you better be reasonably tech savvy at least.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Marianne. I've recently had a conversation with a colleague up in Queensland here in Australia, and he, you know, reluctantly moved his company towards more virtual training, and he was skeptical that it would work. This was a couple of years ago, so he's been doing it for a while now. But it turns out that A, it works in most circumstances, for him at least, or at least for the clients. They're happy. But B, he said that there are quite a few facilitators that he's known over the years that have been great in a classroom, but they don't all do well on the virtual delivery. So he said some people suit that environment better than others, and that was interesting feedback to me as a network hub. You know, how do we help our people to be, you know, adept in that environment? And do we need to look for those kinds of people who will be able to help us take us forward in those spaces if it's not our existing sort of group of trainers?
Pete, to just add a counterbalance to our discussion, to add on to what you're saying, after we came back, I had a chat with a client who's been with us since 2001, and I'm talking about, you know, the reinforcement and excitedly explaining how we're going to add things to, you know, to our offering. And he said, you know what, I don't know any, and by the way, they are a semiconductor company. I don't know whether it will fly with our people. Our people like the idea that they get away from work and come into a two-day program.
Oh, can I work with them? I love them.
So I think it's all a balance.
Yeah, it is a balance, isn't it? And speaking of balance, I'm looking at the time right now, which is the technical end of our session. This is a huge topic. I'd love to keep talking for a long time with all of you. And I didn't even open it up to the floor, and I'm sorry to all of those who are listening. You didn't even get a chance to ask your own questions. But I think, you know, we should all thank Terry and Sham and Bob for sharing so far. And if you all write to me or you put something in the chat box there that says, hey, we need to do this again because we didn't get where we wanted to go or we need to do more, then I'll try and convince these guys to do more with us. And even if they're not there, the rest of us can also talk about it too. So if you want to have a chat in the new year and get onto this and talk about it again, then I'll schedule it and I'm happy to host it for everyone. Look, on behalf of everyone, thank you, Terry, Sham and Bob. I've got some value out of this already. I've already got some ideas for things I want to follow up with you personally, as I'm sure others on the other end of the line can also follow up with you personally if they want to. And if you don't know how to get a hold of either of those three, just contact me and I'll connect you. It's been a fabulous session. Thank you.